Ryan Seacrest here. When you have a busy schedule, it's important to maximize your downtime. One of the best ways to do that is by going to ChumbaCasino.com. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino games like spin slots, bingo, and solitaire that you can play for free for a chance to redeem some serious prizes. So hop on to ChumbaCasino.com now and live the Chumba life. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Dynasty Rankings Mega Podcast. You are either listening to this on the Sports Grid Fantasy Football Podcast feed, the legendary Upside Fantasy Football Podcast feed, or the Full Tilt Fantasy Football Podcast feed. Lots of ways you can be listening to this. Davis Maddock, Jacob Sanderson, and Pat Corain with you here. We are done with the NFL Draft. The NFL Draft has reached its conclusion. It is time for rookie drafts to begin. And let's just not waste any time. You're on the clock, 101. You are taking Marvin Harrison Jr. or Caleb Williams. Jacob, what say you?
Well, I'm taking Caleb Williams almost all the time. I think that these two...
Classic Jacob, hedging it out, sad.
I am hedging it out. The reason why it's a slight hedge is that it is like impossible to trade for the 101 or the 102. Like we've talked before on this show about the difference between not just the price of an asset, but between someone's willingness to give it to you. So I ended up in a situation where coming into this rookie class, I had 7 101s and 3 102s. And it's split enough in the market between who even wants Harrison and who wants Caleb that like I'm offering in a couple spots where I already have two locked in quarterbacks, like, hey, 101 for 102, 101 for 102. No one's interested. This is after I've already traded like 3 or 4 101s just for other assets. So like I did one Caleb plus for Allen. I've done like the 101 for Chase. I've done the 101 for Jefferson. And I'm like, I don't know how I'm going to get any Harrisons. So I pulled trigger once on a team where I already had two elite quarterbacks and just said, screw it. I'm taking Harrison 101 because I don't only want to have three shares. But I do think that the choice is Caleb. I think the more interesting question to me is how much do you need to trade down outside of the top two? Because the gap that I have like in my rankings is not that substantial down to neighbors, but the gap that the market is like in terms of how hard it is to acquire these guys is steep enough that I've like cut out to reevaluate where it's like, I need to be given the iron price if I'm sacrificing one of my chances to get Caleb Williams or Marvin Harrison.
Pat, what do you think?
It's tough because I think the thing with Caleb is the floor is so high now that they have, Odunze as well. And so it's like, if you're getting this prospect that we're all very excited about the ceiling and he's going to a situation as a rookie where the floor is super high, it's very tough not to take him 101, given we know about quarterback prices, how long quarterbacks have value in super flex. I mean, I do think that Caleb Williams is in like a different category of prospects as well, where like he's like a Trevor Lawrence, where he's just going to be like immediately, like he's just going to have value for a long time.
He's Trevor Lawrence. He can suck for 4 years and lose no value. Be a top 15 startup pick in 4 years after doing nothing.
Yes. Because you know that like that team is just going to be that guy's team for a decade. Like he does have that kind of, now maybe 3 years from now, we don't feel that way, but I think it's good. You have to like almost like beat that out of the market. Like that's, he's going to have to be really, really bad. So that's like really hard for me not to go ahead
and
take.
It's Caleb. And I actually, so I'm in a couple leagues that have drafted before the draft. I'm in one that has already started and Marvin Harrison Jr. has gone first in these leagues. I think it's a tactical error one, because you are just giving up, like, you know, you're giving up war bonds. You know, it's just like there's just nothing is more stable than a 101 quarterback going into like a really good spot. It just it's really hard to get better than that, where even if he doesn't play that well, he's so safe. And I think there's sort of this thought that like, oh, yeah, Caleb, maybe he won't have as high of a ceiling as a Hurts or an Allen, or I think that's wrong. I think he probably does if he runs as much as he did in college. I mean, when Caleb came out at Oklahoma, when he first started playing as an 18-year-old, he was a better running quarterback really than a passing quarterback. That was kind of the first thing that leapt out to me about him. Like, I think there is a pretty sizable gap actually between Harrison and Caleb as a 1-on-1. And I think there's a giant gap between Caleb and then Daniels, McCarthy, May, the rest of those guys. I think there's a huge gap there.
I mean,
I think that that's fair. I didn't realize I was on ADP chasing there for a second.
That's fair.
But I was making the argument pre-draft that the gap between Caleb and May was too large in the market. And I guess I probably still think that's a directionally accurate take, but the gap has expanded.
It's expanded, like, yeah.
The gap has expanded for me, but it's expanded even more for the market, so it doesn't matter.
You're going to be able to get Drake May at 108 in rookie drafts this year.
Yeah, that's one of the worst prices of all time.
Yeah, that's crazy. Like, and that's one where I've been pushing it as much as I can in early drafts. I'm on the island with Pat. I don't really know anyone else that has this take, but I also Ron Stewart is also with us on this. I have Drake May at the 104, and in early drafts, a lot of my goal is just how greedy can I be in terms of trading back from the 104?
So that's what I was going
to
say.
I can to still get Drake May. And that's been one of my current experiments.
I've got him at the 104 as well, but you will not be required to take him there.
No, definitely not.
Yeah. I think he will settle on average as the 105 or the 106. I mean, honestly.
Yeah, as of now, he's
going to take McCarthy. Aren't people going to take McCarthy ahead of him?
Well, so they do on occasion. The interesting thing about Drake May is that he has the largest spread of the group. So, like, because he has truthers in a way that McCarthy doesn't, if you go to Dynasty Data Lab, which is like one of the greatest resources imaginable this time of year, if you go and look through, like, Drake May is on average, he's the 106. He's also more likely to be drafted at the 104 than JJ McCarthy. He's also more likely to fall to the 108 than JJ McCarthy. So basically, like, if you happen to be in a draft with a Drake May truther, and specifically one who's not very market concerned, they'll just take him at the 104. They don't care.
No one's really taking McCarthy ahead of
Jaden Daniels.
You have May ahead of neighbors.
Yeah,
that's okay. Well, an old school take. That feels like it's from three years ago.
On most podcasts, but I'm not on this one.
Now I wouldn't. Now let me be clear. If I'm on the clock at 103, I'm working the phones, right? I'm not gonna be totally market. You know, I'm not gonna just be like, you know, fuck it. Got to get your guys. Got to live a lot. Like I would not do that. But I actually was pretty encouraged by what the Patriots did in the draft. It was all offense. They took a wide receiver who people seem to like in round two and round four. Like, I think it's going to feel a little bit like Fantasy Siberia in week three when Jacoby Brissett is checking down to Ramondre Stevenson. But I actually think the market is now – the market and even his believers, we were so discouraged when it became clear he wasn't going to be a Commander that we turned it into – or a Viking, right? I mean, that was really the pipe dream.
I mean, they wanted him. Jacob, didn't you talk about this? Like, the Vikings.
This is the tweet. I was like, JJ McCarthy's current employer values Drake May 2 first round picks more than him, which is like somewhat concerning if you're JJ McCarthy.
Yeah. I definitely would take neighbors over him without thinking too much, because you're not going to get that many chances to take neighbors, and you're going to get a bunch of chances to take May. So even if you slightly prefer May, I think you should take neighbors, because neighbors is an awesome prospect.
All right,
and he's going to be tough to get.
Let's say you're on the clock at 103. You've got a decent team. You know, you've got some wide receivers, but you don't have any of the big five, right? You don't have any of the first round guys. You don't have Tyreek, whatever. And someone offers you the 106 and the 202 to get up to the neighbors. So I am taking that. I'm going to take that. I'm going to say, I'm going to get May, and I'm going to come back around, and I'm going to get A.D. Mitchell, Keon Coleman, Bo Nix, or Ladd with that second pick.
Per my chart, that is like a dead even deal. Like, I have the 202 equals early second, which is a 0.5 base first for me. and I have neighbors a 0.5 ahead of the rest of these guys in a tier. And it's the rookie draft. So you want to offer me an even deal, screw off and come back and offer me a deal where I win. So
I don't think I would do that either.
So my answer is add a little more.
Yeah, because I haven't done as many, Jacob's out here doing a rookie draft every 10 minutes, but like,
do you want to guess how many I'm in right now?
Yeah.
I literally am on the clock. I'm currently negotiating a trade back from the 104.
See, that's like, I mean, so I would be less willing to trade back partly because I'm like, if I don't get neighbors or May, just like ruins this fun for me. Like, if I don't want to trade back to the 106 and get stuck with, you know. I mean, Bowers is still
pretty okay taking Brock. So I'm currently negotiating to move back from the 104 to the 108. The guy I do not need a quarterback in this league at all. I have Herbert, I have Deshaun Watson, I have Matthew Stafford, and I have Derek Carr. I could use one, I guess.
See, I was going to say, so you're about 8 months away from really needing a quarterback if things break.
I think we're all right, though. I think we're all right. I think Watson's got 2 more years left for me. I think Stafford's got 2 more years left for me. Herbert's got infinite years. I also have the 107 in this league. So I'm probably already taking JJ McCarthy. So I certainly don't need 2 more quarterbacks. And I think I'm going to be moving back from the 104 to the 108 and adding Rashee Rice, actually, is what is currently seems to be on the table.
Yeah. I mean, you want to talk about a generational wealth buying opportunities, buying on Rashee Rice for like the next like 6 months. I mean, he'll probably never actually, like, he probably won't be cheaper than this for like 4 years.
No, he won't. In fact, I said in the text, and maybe this is going to blow up the deal, so, you know, be a little slow uploading the audio today. But I literally texted, I like sent several options, and I was like, first, I offered him, he has like no quarterbacks. He only has two. He doesn't have any other starting quarterbacks. I was like, oh, I'll do the 1-4 for your 1-8, 1-12, and I'll throw in Derek Carr. He was like, I have no interest in that. And I was like, all right, fair enough. Who has interest in Derek Carr anyway? So I'm like, oh, you could do Rice instead of the 1-12. And he's like, okay, so like 1-8 and Rice. He's like, I probably need to add something else, right, too, right? And I'm like, I'll take a third. Like, I was like pretty okay to throw something in, to be honest. Like, but yeah, people are out on Rice. Like, I made a trade for Rice in the middle of a rookie draft. And people were just like laughing at me. They're pointing at me. They're throwing tomatoes at me. Like, the attitude on Rice is like, he is going to spend the rest of his life in jail, and that Xavier Worthy is going to take all of his targets like simultaneously. Like, I think it's like, I did the deal for Rice, in the rookie draft, and it was like, and now I'm maybe even ashamed to say it. I thought it was a fair deal at the time, but it clearly isn't. Like, where I had 2 elite tight ends already in that league, one of them being Laporta. I traded Laporta for Rice, and I got 2 additional seconds to come back in and make picks with. And people were like incensed. It was like, Worthy's the number one now. Rice is never gonna play football again. I don't know. It's pretty crazy to me. It kind of reminds me of the Amon-Ra St. Brown post rookie year now, but now at the same price.
That's what Pat's been saying about Rice. Yeah.
Yeah. And now the same price, man. All right, I'm gonna send some trade offers for Rashee Rice after this.
I sadly am the owner of Rashee Rice in many of these leagues, so I kind of just have to sit and eat it. There's nothing really that I can do. So you know, that's sort of a
you want to unload some?
Yeah, I don't actually. I think there another key inflection point is, do you have Rome or do you have Bowers ahead? And even in tight end premium, I have Rome ahead. I think it is a pretty brutal landing spot for Bowers in terms of, one, creativity of using a tight end, like kind of what we've seen happen with Pitts, where it's just like, better learn getting open on what we call for you, buddy, because we're not doing special shit for you. Quarterback play is suboptimal. And then on the other token, the market is reacting like this is a bad landing spot for Rome. I mean, I think we are, again, like a Keenan Allen ankle turn.
Yeah. His dynasty ADP is the 105.
So I'm using market overall in terms of global, including best ball and seasonal stuff. Okay. Like, people,
it is
are,
a bad landing spot in best ball.
It is a bad landing spot in best ball, but I think it's for dynasty. I think it's super optimal because, one, we will be able to hand wave away JSN level production as a rookie. Like, if Rome kind of just does what JSN does with like a real wide receiver's A dot, this upcoming season. I don't think it nukes his value the way it has for JSN and Dynasty. But also, he's got, I mean, if Keenan Allen is just 32 and old and stinks, like, the, I mean, he could, I would not be surprising to see him be ranked ahead of Neighbors consensus next offseason.
It does. So it reminds me a little bit of like CeeDee Lamb with the landing spot, where you're like, oh, this is going to suck for a little bit, but then it's going to be really awesome. And everyone immediately sees 2-3 years down the line to the awesome part. And he's very expensive and everyone's excited. And I get that. I do think that Keenan Allen's still good. I mentioned this on a pod recently that he led all wide receivers in open score last year. I know that the Chargers got rid of him, but they're doing a whole project over there, and Keenan Allen's not a part of it. You know,
they're doing the Quentin Johnston thing.
Yeah. Is it Project 2025, Pat?
Yeah, I think it might be. So Keenan, you know, he's better off in Chicago. And I do think that there's like a little bit of people maybe aren't understanding what they're buying fully with Rome, where you are buying a JSN rookie year experience, probably. Because I think Keenan's still good. And I think obviously DJ Moore is very good. And then Caleb Williams, as good as he's likely to be in the future, is a rookie quarterback. And you also have a guy who just coached under Pete Carroll, who's probably going to run the ball a fair amount. So there's not going to be like a ton of volume in this passing offense this season. And I don't know that Rome's going to like immediately dust Keenan. I think he's probably not as good as Keenan right now today, because that's the way rookie wide receivers generally go. So I wonder if Rome actually loses a little bit of value, or at least there's a buying window on him at this price again next year. I'm taking Bowers over.
Keenan Allen's health, right? Almost entirely Keenan Allen's health.
Well, I think that it comes down to how good Roman Dunze is. Like, I think that the market,
that's what it comes down to.
I mean, first of all, if you're buying the rookie year JSN experience, sounds like the worst VR ride at Epcot Center like I've ever the JSN rookie year experience. Enjoy 1.32 yards for route run.
When does the ride start? It started an hour ago.
Yeah. So that sounds terrible. But I think that the market is a little bit sharper than we sometimes give them credit for. Case in point, the fact that people are appropriately downgrading him in best ball. And meanwhile, he's going as the 105 in Dynasty, currently ahead of Drake May, ahead of JJ McCarthy, ahead of Brock Bowers. So like the Dynasty market, they don't care. They're eating it up. I do think we are a lot better at recognizing situational factors that hold back production as a market than we think. Like oftentimes I'll see people say, oh, you shouldn't buy this guy because this situation, you can get him cheaper later, or, oh, this guy's going to rise later. Like, I think a lot of that stuff just gets priced in. I think the market generally does a pretty good job of it. You look at a guy like a Garrett Wilson, right? Like, he hasn't actually meaningfully produced for you in 2 years. He hasn't lost any value because people watch and people look at some of the peripheral stats and they're like, yeah, this guy's sick. Like, the situation kind of sucks right now, but if it gets better when Rodgers comes back or whatever else, like, that's a guy you're really going to want to have in Dynasty. And he's always had a ton of value. I've made the argument with JSN where people said like, oh, it's just the situation. And, you know, we don't know right now exactly what JSN's future holds. We haven't paid for round two of the JSN sophomore year experience, but like, I think his value would be a hell of a lot higher right now if he had the exact same points per game. But it was like he ran 65% of the routes, had 1.74 yards per route run and 0.23 targets per route run. Like if it was like, oh, he was actually really good last year. He was efficient every time he got on the field, but he didn't run enough routes because Pete Carroll's a boomer who used too much 12 personnel. Like, I think people would be more excited. The issue is he wasn't actually that good in his opportunities. So if Rome is held back because of target competition in a way in which it's more obvious that he was held back because of target competition, but he himself is still efficient and impressive, then I think that the market will be like, okay, he's eventually going to take over for Keenan Allen, or Keenan Allen's gone. Like, I also just think if JSN was awesome last year, Tyler Lockett might not be a Seahawk currently. So I think these things are like interrelated to one another.
No, 100%. It really does come down to how good he is. You know, you talk about Garrett Wilson. Garrett Wilson hasn't done anything, as you said, really. He's going in, you know, the 1-2 turn in best ball drafts because everyone thinks he's a superstar. And that's really what it comes down to. Like, no one thinks JSN's a superstar right now. We're all worried about it now. Now, maybe you're not like terrified, but the superstar case has gotten hurt a little bit. I think that's part of the problem, though, with when you end up in a situation like this. I think it kind of makes it more like way more important that Rome is a superstar. If he's a superstar, you win, full stop. You're never losing if you have a superstar. But if he's not amazing and he's just like good in this situation, we might not be all that excited about a player who's just good. And then when you look at Bowers, I mean, Bowers does profile as a superstar tight end. I don't necessarily agree that he's in a bad situation long term. One, he's not like this super difficult to figure out how to use tight end. He's going to be like in a Dalton Kincaid role. And Michael Mayer is now Dawson Knox. So you're like, in a sense, the fact that you're not going to have him, like the dumbest way you could use Brock Bowers is like, all right, dude, so here's your weight gain plan. You're going to put on 50 pounds you're going to be blocking
so
for
true.
Us. You know, that's the dumbest thing. We're not getting that. Mayer's going to be that guy, right?
I mean, I guess my concern is also more like for Brock Bowers to have like a Kyle Pitts, even, you know, 1,000-yard rookie season, it's like your teammates with Devontae Adams, like there's 30% of your team's targets just like annihilated.
How long are you teammates with Devontae Adams?
Is crazy hard to trade.
I think Devontae Adams has got to be considering a hunger strike at this point.
It's like, not hard to his
like you're. Like, seriously, like, if you're Devontae Adams, like, you have to be considering, like, drastic measures, right? Like, you came here to play with Derek Carr, and they've just gotten, like, 15% marginally worse Derek Carr each successive year as they've gone from Carr to Jimmy Garoppolo to Gardner Minshew, and now they're drafting tight ends in a draft where six quarterbacks went in the top 12. Like, Devontae Adams, like, might be, like, on a watch list by week six. Like, I don't think he's going to take it anymore.
This is a very clean setup for Adams. Play well this year, you're going to be elsewhere next year. He has a $44 million cap hit next year. They save $30 million by moving
cutting
on.
Him.
He is gone after this year. There's not a chance in hell this dude is on the Raiders next season.
So
why haven't
how
they traded
does
him this offseason? What are they doing?
It's $40 million dead cap to trade him. Right
who
now.
Gives a crap? You're the Raiders.
I mean, honestly,
like
you
eat
know
the
what?
40 million dollar dead cap. You're
going to
suck anyway. Get a third round pick.
Points.
Like, let's do something with
so
our
what
lives.
What is Bowers' rookie season value increase look like to you, Pat?
I don't think it's that. I think he needs to be efficient. I think he needs to be really fun after the catch. I think the Raiders need to lose a lot of games and be in position for a new quarterback. Devontae Adams moves. And he's basically like he emerges as like this dude's going to be the number one target on his team in 2025, and he's good. I think that's a pretty big anchor. I think that's he's the number one tight end in Dynasty potentially, depending on how Laporta does.
He definitely. I mean, look, if he goes 50,
he's arguably the number one tight end in Dynasty now. But I think
if he goes for 53 catches, 818 yards, and 4 touchdowns, he is the tight end one in Dynasty. Yeah, if he does that.
So I had Brock Bowers pre-draft as the tight end one in Dynasty, and I had him a tier ahead of Adunze and McCarthy in a two-man tier with Daniels in my rankings. I bring that up because I think when I'm going to say what I'm about to say, people will think that I'm just entirely ignoring the landing spot, and I want it to be clear that I'm not. I have moved him down a full tier.
You've moved him down from very, very high.
I moved him down into the tier with McCarthy and Adunze. I moved him from tight end one to tight end three in Dynasty. So it's not that I haven't reacted. It's just that I was way higher on him than you guys before the draft, and not you and Pat, the royal you guys, the listeners. And so it's not that I haven't reacted. It's just that I think he's incredible. I think with Bowers, right, like the argument with him is just that if you're going to take the leap on tight end anyway, like I think you just have to take the leap on the guy that you think can completely dwarf the position. And to me, Bowers, even as impressive as Trey McBride's season was last year and Sam Laporta's season was last year, I still see a higher level of upside for Bowers than I see for any other tight end. Just given how truly ridiculous the profile was in college, how productive he was at all levels in terms of being a guy that has a perfectly average ADOT for a tight end and is still leading in yards after catch literally every single season, that is having like would have an argument for wide receiver three in this class just based off of his receiving production. I think with Bowers, like, yes, I agree this landing spot is bad. I don't want any players with Luke Getsy really ever. And I certainly don't really want the situation with Michael Mayer where they're going to do the whole like summer of Brock Bowers isn't a tight end. He's a football player. Like Brock Bowers is a receiving weapon. Like I actually think the upside of Brock Bowers to me is that he actually is a tight end in a way that like Kyle Pitts isn't. Like you actually could just have him play tight end for you and just be the best tight end like Travis Kelce, right? Like,
no one has ever on like Rams,
Travis Kelce is a weapon. Like they, no, right. He's just actually a tight end. So we're going to have to deal with some bullshit, I think, from Luke Getsy. But on the bright side, a lot of the Luke Getsy bullshit was the outcome of that was giving Cole Kmet a bunch of undeserved targets. So we'll take those, you know, we'll take like tight end screens, tight end bubble screens to Cole Kmet. You can feel free to translate that over. And I think Gardner Minshew is not really a major holdup, actually. Like he's not good. But if you just need someone to just like matriculate the ball to the tight end position, I think he's like perfectly capable of doing that. So I think he'll have enough of an opportunity where like they took him 13th overall. He's not that weird of a player. Like he's not actually that hard to find uses for on a football field. Maybe his rep participation isn't like 85% or 90%. Like it might've been in some spots, but it should still at least be over 70. I think it could push 80 if he's impressive enough. That you'll have that opportunity for him to show how efficient he is, for him to show how special he is. And then if you get that and you get Adams gone, like at that point, there is no ceiling because there's no Marvin Harrison or Amon Ross St. Brown here that is like a permanent roadblock to them having a 28% target share in a way that there is for the other top tight ends in Dynasty.
Yeah, I mean, I'm also a little bit more optimistic about the, I mean, like we nuked him in the best ball ranks because I think he falls and, you know, projection wise, he's going to fall. He should fall a lot. Like it's going to be hard to project a strong season for Brock Bowers. And, you know, so I do think his outlook for year one, definitely compared to like where it would have been on the Bengals or the Rams. I mean, like those are the teams where you're using Brock Bowers as like a traditional tight end, but then you're also then like he lines up in line and then he splits out and he actually goes into the slot. And then it's mm-hmm. like, what, how are you matching this? And they're using him as a chess piece to actually change what the defense is doing. And then they're running off that. And then they're doing all sorts of fun stuff where they're like, they are actually using his versatility as a weapon as opposed to screwing it up. And there is some risk of Luke Getsy screwing this up, unfortunately. But I also think that Antonio Pierce, like last year, he comes in and it's like, we're getting Davante Adams and Josh Jacobs the ball. Like this isn't that mm-hmm. hard. And then you go ahead and draft Brock Bowers at 13. I'm not that concerned that they kind of take their eye off the ball here. I think they're going to get Brock Bowers, Davante Adams, the ball. I think that's, I mean, I know they're going to run a bunch and this allows them to play more 12 personnel and there won't be a ton of mm-hmm. volume. But I think Bowers is now benefiting from like pretty low expectations at this point. I think people are kind of forgetting the fundamental case. Like we talked mm-hmm. about with Rome, what's the fundamental? How good is he? Is he a superstar? And Bowers, I think, probably is a superstar. I mean, that's his profile yeah, strongly suggests that he is. And
aren't we
really good, I mean, after the catch where you can get this dude the ball on screens? You can get him the short stuff that Minshew can do is perfect fit for Bowers.
The no athletic testing, though. It look, I mean, I don't mean,
dude,
I don't
19
mean to be,
carries, 193 yards, 5 touchdowns at Georgia. Where we are playing,
he led
a
the
team
FBS
full of 5 stars
in Yak every single year of his career. He outproduced Ladd McConkey, he outproduced Adonai Mitchell, he outproduced Jermaine Burton. Like, this dude is the athletic testing thing is like, it's honestly absurd. Like we've seen guys like Mark Andrews, go look at Mark Andrews' RAS. Is that a problem? Hunter Henry's RAS. Is that a problem? Like there's these dudes. And generally I would be on the side where, you know, athleticism matters, but because we're looking for guys who can play the tight end position, like a big receiver, almost all of them have to be hyper athletic to pull that off. But you know who can probably play it as a big receiver? A dude who just did at Georgia for 3 seasons as an underclassman. Right. That seems like a pretty decent bet.
Right. Like the athleticism is usually something that gives us an indicator of the ceiling, but we don't need the indicator of the ceiling because Brock Bowers has just already shown it. So it's not like we're looking at like, oh, Theo Johnson, like what could he ever do? And it's like, well, he's athletic, so maybe something.
He's right? never it's done like anything ever, but he maybe could.
Right. With know? Like that's yeah. like with Brock Bowers, it's like, well, he could just do what he just did. Like I don't know. I just can't get over the fact that that Georgia, a team that is just like shitting 4-star players out its ass every single year, was like, we're making this white tight end a fundamental component of our running game. It's like you can't not be athletic if you're doing that. Or if you're not athletic and you're still doing it anyway, then you're just, I don't know, you have like magical powers, which I'm fine with that too.
Yeah, I'm good with that.
All right, who do you guys have as the 109 in rookie drafts? And why do I have the sense that you're both wrong and you still have Brian Thomas there instead of Xavier Worthy?
Well, we are going to be both wrong based on your take, but we have different guys.
I do have Brian Thomas, yeah. But I have Worthy one spot behind him.
What's the fucking point? What's the point of playing Dynasty Football if you can't look at the fastest player in the history of the Combine going to play with Pat and that doesn't get you excited?
Oh, Davis, if you think Brian Thomas at the 109 is bad, I have Ladd Bukkake at the 109.
Okay, that's not bad, but I think it's playing the game too safe. I think Ladd McConkey is fucking awesome best ball pick. I'm going to steam him all the way up. You could talk me into like 4-5-6 turn Ladd McConkey in best ball.
But I don't think I have to talk anyone into that. I think we're just headed there.
I think that's just going to happen.
Oh, we're going there.
But what range of outcomes could Ladd have that Xavier Worthy does not?
A freaking high one. Here's my affirmative case for Ladd McConkey. I think Ladd McConkey, like I think we have the whole idea of upside wrong. To me, upside at wide receiver, fundamentally, like at least up until like the wide receiver 6, right? At least up until whatever Amon-Ra St. Brown is in Dynasty, which I think is like wide receiver 4. Upside is just how many freaking targets can you earn, right? Like that's fundamentally more than anything else, more than speed, more than size, more than anything. It's just how many darn targets can you get? Can you get 160 targets? You have a lot of upside. I look at these three profiles and like I'm a little afraid of the floor for Ladd McConkey because he hasn't run that many routes. But if you just look at them and it's like, who has provided me the most indication in whatever sample I have that they can earn targets consistently over the middle of the field on NFL routes? Like to me, that is Ladd. Like he's the guy who is up there at 25% targets per route run, 3.26 yards per route run this year. I'm not very confident that can translate because of the route limitations, but he certainly has not given me any reason to think that he can't do that at a really high level in the NFL. Whereas the other guys kind of have, like Thomas has never earned volume at a really high rate, up over 20% targets per route run. Worthy has earned volume at a high rate overall, but a lot of that's on short area targets. And he's been so inefficient on his intermediate and deep targets that it makes me think that that's probably not something that translates particularly well.
You know,
and then you look at the landing spots.
You know who's pretty good at generating offense out of short area targets? Andy Reid and
okay,
Patrick Mahomes.
Sure, but Worthy, like, okay, but they've also done this with other gadgety guys, and it's not worked, right? Like you have to be good, and
well,
maybe Worthy is
Rice.
Good.
It literally did work with Rice.
No, Rice is,
but that's a different player. Rice is like a physical inside player. That's also
not how he's used. He most of his targets are like late in the progression as he's getting open against
right,
zone
scramble
in the middle
drill.
Of the field. He's actually not the gadgety stuff is more been with like Tony and Hardman.
I just mean in terms of close to the line of scrimmage. Yeah, I mean obviously their thought process for drafting Worthy is Kadarius Tony, Sky Moore, Mecole Hardman, but good. I mean that's exactly
and maybe it is. But I'm not sure. And I guess like I had McConkey ahead of Worthy pre-draft. I have thought about it. So I had McConkey ahead of Worthy pre-draft. And then I look at the landing spots and I'm like, one has Herbert, one has Mahomes. I'd rather have Mahomes, but I'm pretty freaking stoked with Herbert too. One of them is competing with literally no one. Like McConkey is going to be earning as many routes and as many targets as he's capable of as soon as week one with Josh Palmer eating a bunch of routes and Quentin Johnston in the shadow realm. And Worthy, like, you know, I don't think that this landing spot is like preventative of anything if he's awesome. like Kelsey's old and Marquise Brown's on a 1 year contract is not very efficient. And who knows what's happening with Rashee Rice. Like if he's just the truth, then it's awesome. But I do think that there's some like barrier to entry where he has to actually be good to get on the field. Like Marquise Brown's a professional wide receiver. I'm pretty confident Rashee Rice is good. Travis Kelce's still good. He's going to have some route clusters. So I don't think that it's like, it's a really smash landing spot at the 80th percentile plus. I don't think that the red carpet is just rolled out for him to the extent where I feel like it's such a good landing spot that I have to put him ahead of players that I like more than him. And I guess there's just a sentiment from a lot of the dynasty community that Worthy already was the slam dunk wide receiver for pre-draft because of the early production, because of some of the raw target earning stats. And I just don't quite see it that way. So I see Worthy as more of a higher variance pick. I think all these guys, frankly, are higher variance picks.
Yeah.
But like the one trait amongst wide receivers that I value most is just earning targets.
If I'm trying to take a high variance pick, I want the dude who might be getting 120, you know, nitwit touches per year with Pat. Yeah, he was inefficient as a deep receiver.
Why can't I have 120 real targets on dig routes from Justin Herbert?
I mean, I don't think you are. I'm not saying that I think you're wrong and bad and stupid for taking Ladd McConkey at the 109. My personal philosophy is to not agree with it. That I think, I mean, we literally already just did it. There is like this residual psychological damage from chasing Hardman up the board and chasing Sky Moore up the board. And even Rice hitting for fantasy is not enough to have undone that psychological damage. But if Xavier Worthy is catching, I mean, look, can't you just close your eyes and see him doing the peace sign to the end zone in the AFC Conference Championship game? Like, it just...
His hands are so small, I don't know that we'll see the peace sign, but I can...
To me, I mean, it is just in the same way that Ladd McConkey is just like younger, athletic Keenan Allen in this offense. Like, that's the plan. You can see exactly what they want. They just want Tyreek Hill again. They want Tyreek Hill on a rookie contract.
Everyone wants Tyreek Hill again. It's hard to find.
Right. And I'm betting that Worthy's floor is better than Hardman and Sky because he played for a real program. You know, no disrespect to Western Michigan.
Well, Hardman played for Georgia, but he didn't do anything.
Did he play though?
Yeah.
he didn't play much. Sort of like Ladd McConkey.
Hey, I'm on Ladd McConkey. I'm not against that.
Yeah.
I love players who didn't play at Georgia.
What's your take on Worthy versus Brian Thomas, who I assume you have at 109?
I do have him at 109. I have these guys right next to each other though, and Jacobs, I'm actually moving Ladd up a little bit more after Jacobs' case. I think the Ladd case is pretty strong.
It is.
Just situationally and what he does and kind of what they need, it all fits together. He was very efficient. Targets per route runner was really good. It is not great that this dude was not on the field a ton. And, you know, like yards per team attempt. Like, don't look at yards per team attempt. That's no good.
No,
you gotta look
no,
at the
I didn't mention that. I didn't mention that.
And so that... It's like, it's a major McConkey. He's also an older player, a 4 year player. It's like, there's a lot of holes in this profile. I understand how it can hit, but it's sort of like a safety profile. That's actually not that safe. Like it doesn't check all the boxes would normally look for in safety. And then it's being pitched as like, oh, this dude's definitely going to hit. But like, he actually has some real major red flags.
And that has not been my case. Like, I've not been making a safety case for him. I agree with you that the floor is actually low. I think that the upside is underrated because I think people are like, what do we do with a possession wide receiver? Like, white guy. Like, I think it's actually a high variance profile.
Well, it's a high variance profile.
It's the new NFL. It's the new NFL meta, too, where you can totally get there being a receptions merchant. If you you could just get 105 receptions.
I think you can always have gotten there being a receptions merchant. I think being a receptions merchant is perpetually underrated.
Yeah, I guess what I'm worried about is like, he's like, okay, he's sort of Zay Flowers, but he's on a Greg Roman offense. And, you know, and that's actually not fun, right? Because the only reason we like Zay Flowers is because Greg Roman left and we got Todd Monken. So that's where I'd be a little bit worried. The kind of like stuck on, it doesn't feel like, oh, you're stuck on the Chargers. Like that could be a thing because you get Justin Herbert. But I think after a year of Greg Roman, we might start to think about stuck on the Chargers as a thing. Especially if he's not awesome. You know, if he's awesome, we're not going to care. But it could be really low volume. It could be really uncreative. I mean, Greg Roman, like, literally the defense was calling out this guy's plays the last time we saw him. Like, this dude is washed as an offensive coordinator. I think it's a major problem. So there's a lot of variance to the McConkey pick. I think Worthy is obviously got the high ceiling. I was never on the, like, Worthy, you know, should be ahead of Brian Thomas train ahead of the draft. I think his profile is sort of sneaky scary. He was a very, very inefficient as a deep ball receiver.
He's fancy Gabe Davis.
No, he's not fancy Gabe Davis. Or you're saying Brian Thomas. You're saying Brian Thomas.
Yes.
Oh, no, I'm saying Worthy's deep ball stuff scares me because he just was so inefficient at it. And then they kind of, you know, they had to use him on more of the gadgety stuff, which obviously Andy Reid is going to do. But, like, what does he develop into? Can he become the number one in a team? Or do they kind of keep looking after the season and, you know, he's Hardman plus or something? That's so he's very high variance to me. Brian Thomas is high variance too, but I do think you have one major out headed your way, which is that Christian Kirk is probably gone after the season. He's got a cap situation.
And Evan Engram could be done at any time.
Evan Engram, yeah. So they could save like $14 million to get a $27 million cap hit after this season. And then his contract ends after 2025. So I think Thomas, who is, you know, you're kind of betting that he's DK Metcalf. That's like sort of the upside of his profile. He is kind of a downfield. I mean, what is DK Metcalf if not fancy Gabe Davis? Just very, very fancy.
Very, very fancy, sure.
So you are correct. But, you know, we're looking at Trevor Lawrence's number one in a year or two. And I just think he's the best prospect of the three. I know he's not a perfect prospect. He doesn't earn targets like these other guys, but he was playing with Malik Nabers. And his yards per route run was really good because when he got targets, it was usually deep downfield. And also, he's a giant man who's super fast. And he's coming out early. He was drafted the earliest of all these guys. I just think that Thomas, and it's not like by a huge margin, but I think Thomas was the best prospect and he lands in a good spot. And so I am still taking him first.
I think that's fair. I think that people should. Wow, I'm really doing this the Sam Sherman today. I think that's fair.
Are they derogatory or not?
I'm doing the
I think that's fair. Complimentary.
I'm doing the Arrested Development meme where I'm like, it didn't work out with Sky Moore. It didn't work out with Mecole Hardman, but it might work for Xavier Worthy.
The very online podcast. I might even shorten the gap after hearing this. I agree with you on terms of just like basically they're all good landing spots. So pick the ones you like the most. And I, for the record, I have these guys really tight. I have McConkey right now at 60. I have Worthy at 61, and I have Thomas at 66. But I've been convinced enough that I'm gonna literally just move Thomas to 62 and just have them all three directly in a row.
That's what I did. That's you got me to do that with McConkey, who I had behind. And I think I'm gonna change this so that there's a tier break. Well, do you think there's a tier break after these three? Like, what about Bo Nix and, you know, going at Jonathan Brooks?
I have a five person tier, but I do have the three wide receivers ahead of Nix and Brooks.
That's how I have it now. But should it be that way, or should these guys? Because we're so, you know, it's tough to decide between these three.
Here's
my question on why it's a yes. My reason for why it's a yes is if someone came to me and they were like, "I need a quarterback. Is it okay if I take Bo Nix ahead of any of these three receivers?" And like, my answer would be yes to that question. So I would say no.
I would say that is hoisting yourself on your own petard. Too cute by half.
Okay, so then they're not in the same tier for you. And then my answer would be the same thing for Brooks. Someone's like, "I need the running back, man." I'd be like, "Sure." Whereas no, if someone came to me and they were like, if someone was like, "I need the running back, can I take Trey Benson ahead of one of these guys?" My answer to that would be no. So that's like my heuristic on why I'm having Brooks in the same tier but behind, and Benson in a separate tier.
I think that makes sense. Yeah, and I think you can take Bo Nix if you need one of these guys.
Take Bo Nix.
Yeah,
I've got Bo Nix.
I'm getting
12.
So much Bo Nix, guys. Like I've been drafting Bo Nix at like the 203. I've been trading up to get Bo Nix at the 2-2, 2-3.
Like I agree.
I am filling my bag full of Bo Nix. If you had told me 4 years ago, as I was watching this guy just get melted into the earth at Auburn, that I would be trading assets to go get Bo Nix shares in Dynasty rookie drafts.
I think he's right to do it. Now, I'm going to have a difference from you guys in rankings, though, because I've got Keon Coleman and A.D. Mitchell ahead of Jonathan Brooks, and I fully
A.D. Mitchell
stand by it. Yeah.
I get Coleman because he's on the Bills. I understand the appeal.
I
don't get the A.D. Mitchell one.
I believe that the Colts is a better landing spot than the market. Like, I don't think the Josh Downs reception merchant, Michael Pittman, you know, Drake London with a worse
Michael
publicist.
Pittman is a receptions merchant, actually.
Yeah,
there might be no greater receptions merchant in the
no,
league.
No, there are greater. There's many greater.
There's many greater. That's the issue. And I think Richardson, a full season of Richardson, like, I think he can just lead this very good, explosive offense. Like, sure, a la Lamar or Hurts, the attempts might be lower than we would like in general. But I think it's pretty non-zero that A.D. Mitchell by, like, week eight is just better than Pittman. And, you know, Josh Downs goes back into a very auxiliary reserve-style role. And, I mean, I've been bullish on Mitchell the entire time. You know, I very
that's
much...
Right, that's true. That's
I very true. Much get the... Like, I have no analytics-based, like, oh, actually, you should consider this for his... you know, yards per route run or whatever. I mean, I think a lot of it can be, if we were to go back and do this exercise in 2 years and it turns out A.D. Mitchell is really good, I think a lot of it will be he had bad quarterback play and really good teammates and, you know, whatever. And if it turns out he's good, I think, or if it turns out he's bad, then yeah, you'll just say, well, it was obvious. We knew he was going to be bad the entire time. He just was really good at the combine. And my thesis has been the same, which is he was really productive very young at good schools, and he showed up in all these big games, and I think a lot of that stuff is indicative of a guy who can play well in the NFL. Yeah. And I view it as a plus landing spot, which the market does not.
Yeah, I think it's a bad landing spot, because if he has a bad season, we're just doing this again, right? And he's stuck with Pittman, who's there. Like, Pittman's locked in for 2025.
Yeah.
Downs
yeah.
is on a rookie deal.
And 26. He's got 3-year extension. Yeah.
Yeah. They can get out at 26 if they want. He'd have to be pretty bad, but they would save $24 million at that point. You've got Anthony Richardson's obviously there. Like, Steichen's not going anywhere after this year. So it's just you're running it back. And that, in a sense, creates like a very low floor, because if he doesn't emerge in a situation that I think it's not ideal to emerge. I think Josh Downs is good. Josh Downs is limited. He's like a big, physical, tiny guy, you know, playing out of the slot. So that's not
But if he can't beat out Josh Downs for targets, and like, it does, he wouldn't have hit anywhere. You know, it just doesn't matter.
Yeah, although
Josh Downs can ball, dude.
He can ball. Yeah, Josh Downs is a good player.
Cole's corner on this show, that guy's good. I'm just telling you, that guy can play. Yeah. I have no idea how fantasy valuable he is, but that guy could absolutely play. If it's third down and I see that the target is going to number one, my heart rate is so much calmer. Like, I just know he's making the play.
Yeah, he's one of these guys that's tough for us in fantasy because he doesn't fit. Like, he's just in the wrong body. Like, if he was a big dude, like, this guy would be, you know, like a second round pick. We'd be so excited about Josh Downs. But yeah, I mean, maybe you'd need another quarterback because we don't have that much volume here. But that's also part of the problem for Mitchell, is that how much passing volume can we possibly get out of at Anthony Richardson, who we all love as an actual fantasy quarterback, but like he's got real limitations as a passer. I mean, his short area accuracy is a major problem. Like, I don't think it's a huge problem for fantasy because he's got a good deep ball and he runs a ton. But how much of that helps A.D. Mitchell? I mean, the deep ball stuff, he can definitely be a part of. That should be a part of his game. But, you know, his targets per out run could be like 15% this year. Like, it could be bad.
My fear, I mean, first off, man, I'm excited to watch the Colts offense this year. I got to get out there.
You should be.
But second off, I think that the Colts are kind of becoming the Packers, where it's a really good coach. It's an offense that I have a lot of faith in. I'm extremely excited to draft Anthony Richardson. And then you have this running back that's going to kind of benefit from how good this offense is, because they're going to run the ball plenty still, and he's going to get, you know, a lot of goal line opportunities. But like, then you get into these receivers, and it's going to be like, you're already taking off, you're already running a lot. Now Richardson's going to also run himself a lot. He's going to scramble. Luckily, he's not going to take sacks. So you have that going for us. But then we have Pittman, who's good, not great. We have Downs, who's good, but not great. We have Mitchell, who's maybe good, but not great. I don't know that Alec Pierce is just going to run zero routes for this team. I have a feeling that like we're going to have, it's going to be fast forward to week six, and JJ Zacharyson is going to be doing the like data dump on Twitter. And there's going to be a tweet that's like, Alec Pierce ran 48% of the routes this week, and everyone's really annoyed about it. I see that in our future. And it's just going to be, I think, very difficult to project. Like, this offense is going to have to win off of efficiency, and I don't know exactly how we know who's going to hit on that from a week-to-week basis. I think it could be a struggle. If Mitchell's just awesome, it doesn't matter, right? Like, if he's just awesome, it doesn't matter. I just was never that high on Mitchell before. Like, I felt like I had a ranking on Mitchell that was higher than I wanted it to be pre-draft, because it looked like he was going to go in the first round, and I was like, I don't want to get totally buried alive if he goes to the Chiefs or the Bills in the first round. But now that he went to like kind of an okay landing spot, and he went after all these guys that I already kind of thought were better than him, I'm like, you know, why am I being forced to rank this guy? Like based on what is kind of like
sure.
my attitude about it.
Take Bryce Young's timeshare back with Chuba Hubbard. Sure. Whatever.
Thanks. Yeah, I mean, you're definitely getting a timeshare back this year.
I'm also taking Bryce Young's wide receiver one over AD Mitchell. So.
No, come on. Get serious. You want to talk about red flag profile? No, I will not abide.
I'm also not abide. I'll defend this. Where are you on this, Pat? Who do you have higher, Mitchell?
I have AD Mitchell one spot ahead of Leggett. I have him one spot.
One spot. All right, one spot.
But I have Ricky Pearsall ahead of AD Mitchell.
Okay, there we go.
I'm super low on both of these guys. I didn't like their prospect profiles at all, and their landing spots are so bizarre.
Question one, do you guys care that it's actually pronounced Xavier Leggett?
No.
I kind of like it.
Okay, well, yeah, see, there we go.
In my head, he's Xavier Mingo. That's all.
Xavier Leggett can win you your league. I mean, we can do stuff with
yeah, him. Xavier Leggett winner.
All right, yeah, I just moved my head to AD Mitchell.
Nice. All right. I think all of these guys, like Pearsall, Mitchell, Leggett, it's like it's kind of a crap sandwich all around in terms of their profile. Like we have Leggett, who didn't do anything, and then he did a lot of things. We have Mitchell, who did a little more things, but also never really did all that much. And then we have Pearsall, who was just kind of like slow and steady, and it's really like kind of a film guy more than it is a production guy. And his production was fine. It was never bad. It was just kind of stable. I just don't see as much of a difference between these guys that I would rather take the guy who went like several picks later versus the guys who went round one. I also think with Leggett, like I have no doubt that if he's good, he's going to scream up in value, because there's just nothing there. It's like Deontay Johnson and then nobody basically. I know Adam Thielen is still there, but I prefer not to think about him. With Mitchell, like I do think he has multiple hurdles where I could see it being like, oh man, what a ball player. Like, how are we going to get from high end wide receiver three to wide receiver one?
You have Pearsall over Leggett?
Yeah, I have Pearsall 2.5, Leggett 2.6, Mitchell 2.7. And then I don't know who to take after that. It becomes a shit show immediately after that.
Where do you have Penix compared to those guys?
I have him at the 204.
So just ahead. Yeah, that's where I have him.
And I mean, when I first had that ranking, the hope was it was a ranking that I wouldn't be drafting Michael Penix, and I was incorrect. That's a ranking where you are drafting Michael Penix.
You're going to draft like a lot of Michael Penix there. The Pearsall one, I think the Pearsall one's like really easy to see. I mean, they just spent this entire offseason trying to trade Brandon Ayuk, and then no one wanted, apparently what they were trying to go get neighbors with Ayuk. It's like, yeah, that's not going to work, guys. like you can't just trade. How about neighbors who have to pay for neighbors who don't have to pay? What do you guys think? Like, no,
this is literally like a dynasty manager. It's like, hey man, no one even knows if neighbors is good, bro. I'm gonna give you Brandon Ayuk. That guy's a stud. What are you doing? Are you not taking it? What are you, an idiot?
Yeah. You got to give him a massive contract. And yeah, Neighbors on a rookie deal, but that's not important. But look, then after that, they try to trade Deebo Samuel. The odds of one of these guys moving on after the year are extremely high.
Yeah.
And Pearsall, the thing with Pearsall, and this is not normally the way I look at wide receivers, but I make exceptions for Shanahan first round picks. Is he good today? Is he good? And like, CJ Stroud is like, this dude, like, put it together. Fifth year guy who got good in his final season is normally like a pretty big red flag. And look, if he's
Some
going,
may say the actual reddest of flags is the
it's a
fifth
red,
year
it's a
senior.
very red, but normally, like, we pay, Kevin White is like the 102 or whatever. Like, normally,
Yeah.
we have to pay up for this profile. We're not paying that much for this profile. It's on a Shanahan offense. In a Shanahan offense, it's almost like the guy's a running back where you're like, is he good
Yeah.
today? Because
Yeah.
everything's
Right.
schemed. Everything's like the offense is doing so much of the work. So it's like, can you just do the job? Can you do the job? It's not as much on the skill level of the guys because they're going to get
Yeah.
so elevated by the system where I don't, again, there's a limit to how much I'm willing to bet on that. But like his reception perception was awesome. He
Right.
was really good in the intermediate area of the field. I think he can get open on intermediate routes. Like, I think he can do that right now. Maybe the ceiling isn't ultra high, but like if he's productive in a small sample, probably back weighted to the end of the season, and they get rid of Debo or Ayuk, which is going to happen, how does his value not skyrocket? It's this one's an easy this one's the layup to me. You grab him in the middle of the second round and he's bank
I should
value.
probably move him ahead of Penix. I don't
I
know.
think I just talked myself into him over Penix too.
Yeah, I so I
Maybe
have
I'll do that.
I've got Pearsall at 19, the wide receiver 10. I think I can move him up to ahead of Penix,
Okay.
yeah,
I'm gonna
at
move him out of
17.
Penix right now. I have them literally back to back. I'm gonna change that. I'm gonna move him ahead.
All right, we are running up again. I got a hard out in 13 minutes. Two
Okay.
guys I really wanted to make sure to cover were Ben Sinnott and Jermaine Burton. I think Burton could end up being like, oh my God, I got Burton at the 303 in my rookie draft, and he just is like getting targets from Joe Burrow. Like insane. Or could totally
Agreed.
go the other way. Oh my God, I took Jermaine Burton 303 and he just like has not played. Like Charlie Jones is getting all his routes. I don't really know what to think. And then Sinnott to me feels like the Cole Kmet memorial pick, where you take him at the 301, you kind of forget you have him, and you're just starting him every week by like week five in managed leagues.
Yeah, I could see that.
Yeah, Sonata he's just like the classic guy you should be taking every year. Anytime
Every
there's a Ben
year.
Sonata, you take
He's
him.
your vegetables pick of the draft.
It, the yeah, I
Exactly.
mean, who is he? He's probably Pat Freiermuth. He's probably Cole Kmet. But these guys are just so much more valuable than that pick, really, than you have a right to at that pick. So
Yeah.
just take him. I really think, it's like, but look, I could get Jalen Wright. Jalen Wright's gonna, pass Devon Achane. He's big, he's fast. He's in Mike McDaniel offense. Like, yeah, but like also Jalen Wright most of the time is nothing. He's usually just nothing.
Yeah.
He could be way more than Ben Sinnott. But I think, I'm taking Sinnott over that level of running
I
back
mean,
just.
I'll probably have zero Jalen Wright in Dynasty, like literally probably zero.
That sounds terrifying.
Yeah,
I mean,
I want to
what
sprinkle
is the
in, so.
point? What is the point when I can take Malachi
What is the
Corley
point? Did
or
you watch their
Sinnott?
running game last year? Okay, I don't. I'm not really a Malachi Corley guy, so I've
Oh,
been. I'm.
you better learn Aaron Rodgers
I'll have fun
checkdowns,
staying poor.
buddy.
I'll have
You know
fun
how old
staying
Aaron
poor.
Rodgers is? Like, you're gonna get like a fun half rookie season that reminds us of Randall Cobb, and then Rodgers is gonna like, go serve his
Well,
Secretary of Defense or
if I
something,
can
and then we're
recycle
okay.
a
I'll be
joke, if I can recycle a joke for
ambassador
the
to
third
Liberia.
time here on this show, I'm just
Imagine Aaron
betting.
Rodgers, sorry. Imagine Aaron Rodgers as an ambassador. Can you think of possibly a worse ambassador than Aaron Rodgers, who is less likable and like an immediate first impression? Good God.
Oh, I mean,
They're not sending their best people.
I just need Malachi Corley to be, watching Loose Change and the Zeitgeist films or whatever, and he just shows up to rookie OTAs with Rodgers, and he's like, some interesting stuff out there, man. Aaron, have you looked into this? They're hiding the existence of giants from us. I don't know if you knew this.
Have you guys ever, like, do you guys often come into contact with Aaron Rodgers types in your day-to-day life? I find it so difficult. Like, one time I was at this concert and I met this guy who showed up in a Leafs jersey. So I'm like, sick. So we go watch the playoff game the next day. And at the first intermission, he leans over and he just stares into my eyes. And he's like, hey, man, what are your thoughts on 9/11?
This is the first thing that comes to my mind. This is verbatim the first meeting between DeShone Kizer and Aaron Rodgers. Like, Kizer confirmed this.
And he's staring at me. And the only thing I can think of to say is I just say, I'm opposed.
That's great. Oh,
that is really
good. He's like, anyway, it goes on this whole thing. But yeah, Malachi Corley, probably not drafting him. Ben Sinnott, definitely drafting him. Jermaine Burton, super drafting him.
Yeah, Jermaine Burton, we're in.
I think there's like reason to think that he's not good, but there's definitely reason to think that he is good in terms of a guy who can like actually win as a downfield weapon, who's been efficient, who's played at big programs, who's been reasonably productive. And like any nitpicks you want to make and like, oh, it's actually just based on like a few high variance deep targets or like, oh, character concerns, like that stuff doesn't matter because we're drafting with a 2-3 turn. So I'm very into drafting Jermaine Burton. I think I have him ranked at like the 209 or something in my ranks.
Another, right. I think, pretty close to layup where T. Higgins is not signed long term. Now, they could work something out with T. Higgins, but he's probably
I don't think
elsewhere.
They will. I think that franchise is poor.
Yeah, so most likely Higgins plays somewhere else, and he's kind of doing that like second complementary downfield role that Higgins now has. I mean, we're going to get really excited about that. The other thing that's nice about Burton, who was the guy? Was it Gallo who said always draft the weed guy?
That's so smart. Yeah, always draft the guy who got suspended for weed in college. Yeah, that's genius shit.
I think that was DJ Gallo. That's not my but it's a good. I mean, he was doing it as a bit, but it was like a legit thing. Like you always draft. I mean, Josh Gordon was the weed guy. Yeah, he's not a
Josh Gordon is still the weed guy.
Yeah, he's the That, unfortunately, still the weed that came back. But yeah. Burton, that's not the deal. He's not a weed guy, but he is a guy who fell in the draft because of, you know, questions about, you know, him getting on with his coaches.
Well, by the way, that's the rumor about Mitchell too, is that he basically was like the worst interview at the combine. I taught George Pickens everything he knows. I'm the man. Like that was
that's not great.
Buy the asshole. No, you're saying buy the asshole.
Well, I'm saying buy the asshole in certain situations, and when the asshole is attached to Joe Burrow, and the Bengals have got like TJ Houshmandzadeh apparently signed up to like get Burton on the program.
Oh, nice.
So that's and Houshmandzadeh are like, they have like a relationship.
That's awesome.
I guess he's been training him. And so they like basically, that was part of the pick for them apparently, of like knowing had Houshmandzadeh on board to help this guy develop. I'm into that. If you have a program in place for the asshole, great. I want
Davis,
an asshole with a program.
You know who the Colts wide receiver coach is? Like, who's going to be working with AD Mitchell every day?
Who?
Reggie Wayne. He's our wide receiver coach.
Oh my God. All right, let's go. I thought you were going to go Marvin. Like you were going to go Marvin Harrison and be like, look, no one's better than Marvin Harrison.
No, he's at the shooting range, but but no, Reggie Wayne, like you couldn't ask for like a better mentor, in my opinion, in terms of if you're looking for getting someone with the program. Very in on Burton.
We got to get out of here. Favorite fourth round rookie pick. I'll say Kamani Vidal, although I fear Kamani Vidal Kamani Vidal is going to learn.
My favorite rookie pick is your favorite rookie pick. He's all of our favorite rookie picks.
So the
to take Kamani Vidal?
You could take him. If you took him ahead of Luke McCaffrey and Troy Franklin, I'd be like, whatever, it's fine. Really?
All right. I think that's where I have him ranked.
Yeah. And then I'll say the guy you will be able to get in the fourth round most of the time, Laube or Jatavion Sanders.
I'll say, I mean, those are, I actually need to move Vidal up some. I'm being too cowardly there. But I'll say Tyrone Tracy.
Nice. Oh, okay. Also very good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tracy drafts.
Yeah.
Today on Sleeper, by the way, he's unranked still. So you can just get him whenever.
Tracy just hit me is an amazing best ball pick. That's like kind of where it first clicked because like Devin Singletary, like we know, like who's the weakest starter in the whole league probably is Devin Singletary, who, you know, he can go take someone else's job, but holding a job for a whole year is maybe not what he's going to do. And then Tracy is, he's got that path. How does he get on the field? Oh, he gets on the field as a pass catcher, obviously. But then what if he's good? What if he kind of keeps earning more volume from there? And then, you know, who can be, who's got a path to being a clear cut starter next year who catches passes? Tracy, you know, like, and Vidal, I guess you could say that a little bit about, but probably not catching that many passes, right? It's more, it's more that he's going to be kind of an early down dude. But that's more replaceable. You know, like you're both as a dynasty manager and then for the Chargers to go out and find someone next season. Like Vidal definitely he strikes me as that guy that we get excited about. Like next year, he's going to be their starter. It's like, no, next year, they're going to sign someone. Next year, they're going to bring in a massive free agent. And we're never going to think about Vidal again. Whatever you get from Vidal this year, you probably want to trade him as soon as possible. Because if you're a ground and pound team, you generally have a running back, and that year that you don't tends to be the outlier, not the plan.
Yeah, it's giving James Robinson Tyler Allgeier for sure with him.
Yeah,
but
Tyler Allgeier is a very good comp. We got to get out of here. I have to get out of here. These two other guys,
Ray Davis, that was gonna be my pick.
Yeah, who?
Ray Davis was going to be my
guy. Oh, Ray Davis is really good. I mean, I just think he's a third round pick. Ray Davis is going to lead the Buffalo Bills in carries.
Oh, did you need him to be a fourth round pick? I'd have missed.
Well,
that
no, in a draft with Davis, I'll say Jonathan Brooks.
Sure. I might take Ray Davis over Jonathan Brooks straight up, honestly.
Come on, man.
I'm so fucking out on the Panthers and the Bryce Young experience. I got offered Bryce Young for the 205 the other day, and I just rejected it. I was like, whatever, I don't care.
Okay, you know who's honestly the best fourth round pick that I've just been clicking constantly the fourth? Spencer Rattler.
Yeah,
that's a good
free
one.
Money. It's free money. Yeah.
Like, I have this theory that if you're about Corum and Wright, that if you draft the player who's the closest possible comparable to the player who's already at the top of your depth chart, that doesn't mean you hate your player at the top of your depth chart. It means you love them and you're just worried they're going to get hurt. If you have Derek Carr and then you draft Spencer Rattler, that means you have been radicalized by watching Derek Carr check down 30 times per game. And you are so pissed off that you look and you're like, who is the least Derek Carr quarterback in this class? And it's like when you like break up with one person and you're like, what did I dislike about this girlfriend? You're like, ah, she like always leaves the milk like open in the fridge. And you're like, I need someone who's going to be completely different. And like they literally drafted quarterback Jordan Poole in Spencer Rattler.
Dennis that Allen is just at the club, just like partying with.
Extremely it's like they're sick of Derek Carr knitting sweaters on the couch, and they're like, "I need this guy popping oxy. Like, let's go."
Spencer Rattler midlife crisis. Let's go.
Yeah.
All right, everyone, we're getting out of here. You can get your dynasty rankings on Thinking About Thinking, Legendary Upside, Patreon.com/TakeCast. You can listen to the Sports Grid Fantasy Football Podcast, the Full Tilt Dynasty Podcast, or the Legendary Upside Fantasy Football Podcast. We will be back, I assume relatively soon, with more rankings discourse. See you then.
Ryan Seacrest here. When you have a busy schedule, it's important to maximize your downtime. One of the best ways to do that is by going to ChumbaCasino.com. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino games like spin slots, bingo, and solitaire that you can play for free for a chance to redeem some serious prizes. So hop on to ChumbaCasino.com now and live the Chumba life. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.